Last few times here, we've been looking into the apparent subject-object dichotomy and how when a human is identified with the body-mind process, any part of it, as oneself exclusively, or even more specifically and subtly, identified with awareness itself as what you are, I am awareness. This perception or view conditions the experience that there is a world of objects, and I am the subject that is witnessing these objects. So we've been looking into that a little bit from different angles. And one of the things that happens as we actually awaken is that we discover that the egocentric view, yeah, the self-centered view that humans can get into at times, is an isolated and ultimately fear-based position to live in. And so we can get a sense at times that life or ourselves, if you will, is evolving through time, and that evolution in consciousness can move from an egocentric perspective into an ethnocentric perspective, which basically means you identify with a group of people. I am a member of this particular group, yet this group is separate from other groups. You see this often in religious practice, spiritual practice, political views, cultural views, lifestyle practices, and so forth. And this particular view, the ethnocentric view, we can begin to consider and observe once we're actually aware of a possibility that we can actually experience ourselves as world-centric. At any point, now you can still be egocentrically based, at times in a given day, ethnocentric in your view, and then later at 4 p.m. or 4:30 in the afternoon, you watch the evening news or the early part of the evening news, a snapshot, or at 7 o'clock you watch the news, and now you're a world-centric being suddenly. You actually feel yourself as part of a unicity or family. And yet often you're still experiencing yourself as centered in this particular body-mind process, which means that, perhaps, your ethnocentric perspective or world-centric perspective is actually filtered through your ego. And if we've taken on the idea that the way you awaken or become spiritually evolved is to dissolve your ego, you're actually going to be fighting against something that is a part of your experience of life as much as your big toes. So what am I going to do? I'm going to cut off my big toes? Today. Yeah, many things happen today, yeah, like every day on planet Earth. Today in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, a baby was born. Right out in the open. Among the many things that happened today in Haiti, a baby was born. And when a baby's born, we all know, there's an umbilical cord. The umbilical cord needs to be cut. You can't leave it attached. Okay, this umbilical cord was pinched off with one of these plastic things that you attach to the top of your garbage bag. And then this umbilical cord was cut with a knife, like many tools that are being used right now for surgery. Thank goodness it wasn't rusty, but it wasn't sterilized. Several days ago, a young child's leg had to be cut off, amputated, with a rusty hacksaw blade, This is happening right now. These kinds of things, atrocities, unbelievable. Hell on earth, devastation. Bodies being lifted into dumpsters with backhoes. The egocentric view, however it manifests, isn't an enemy. It's a friend in disguise. So some of you may know of the work of Paul Farmer, Partners in Health. He's been in Haiti for a good 20 years working grassroots. Has a hospital, was the only hospital that was left standing and functional, amazingly enough, after the earthquake. He's been making statements for a long time about what we can learn from Haiti. Not what we can necessarily do for Haiti, do for the people of Haiti, do for the politics of Haiti, and so forth, but what we can learn. So what can we learn from an event today, like a mother giving birth in the wide open with people walking all around? And by the way, the same woman's son who died in the earthquake. Last words he said to his mama as he said, patted the tummy, something along the lines of, take care of the little one in there. He's gone. And that's our condition. If we are identified with this as what we are, exclusively, that will condition our fear of death. It'll condition our apprehension about the demise of this. Because it's so easy, isn't it, my friends? It's so easy to look at a catastrophe like that and say, it's not happening to me. It's happening over there. It's happening to them. It's not happening to me. We don't know what the me is, and yet we go around saying and acting like we do. We don't know what or who we are, but we go around acting or saying as if we do. So instead of coming at this with a subjective interpretation, a judgment, an emotional reaction, what if we just pause in any moment, maybe right now, and as they would say in science, see if you can look objectively. Well, even that statement has been proven to be impossible. Because there's a definition of objectivity that's based on there's some subject who can be objective. Never mind that the so-called subject has been discovered quite some time ago by many to be intimately a part of that which is being observed. And yet I go around ascribing my view, even if I don't say it to anybody else, just within myself, as the truth. I'm seeing things clearly, I'm being objective, I know what I'm talking about. Or I say, I don't know what I'm talking about. You know what? That's somebody who's saying, I know that I don't know what I'm talking about. In a way, it appears we can't get away from this conditioned view. Or can we? Granted, anything that's said is just one reference point, isn't it? One reference point amidst the multiplicity of reference points. So we at times can see that we can have a feeling about, a reaction to, an investment in something. Could be anything. Right, wrong, the way things should be done. We should have health care, but now it's going to take longer. If it happens at all, we're going to keep bickering. And the terrorist alert level goes up because the news says Americans with American passports living right amongst us are being recruited as we sit here to blow us up. It's not a plane coming in. It's not a machine gun from some other place. It's our neighbors. The egocentric, even ethnocentric perspective can get very unsettled when that's heard. Even the world-centric perspective goes, my goodness, what's happening? What's happening? Right? We're sitting on the edge of living and dying in every single moment. That's what's happening. It's not just happening where there's an earthquake. It's not just happening where there's terrorist attacks, people blowing themselves up and anybody around them. It's happening to everybody. That's not negative, pejorative, wrong. That's the truth. This process that I call myself, this body-mind process, is a living, dying process, continually. As I, so to speak, or we, so to speak, become open to this, you could say that's becoming more clear. Or you might use the term rational. So, the individual, so to speak, which doesn't exist actually, there is no individual, but we'll just say the individual, just for language's sake, the individual is caught up in views, opinions, ideas, experiences, feelings, and is therefore not objective. You're not being rational, they said to Tommy in class. You need to be rational. This is what we're doing now. Because he's misbehaving, he's not being rational. So now he's going to become rational. Okay, he's going to become objective. He's going to toe the line of some kind. He's been conditioned. And it's viewed as better than being emotionally reactive, absorbed in your feelings, acting out, misbehaving. It's a better position to be in. So then we get another conditioning. Now we're not to just be rational or objective about certain things. You need to be objective and rational about everything. How are you going to do that, if that's even been suggested to you, if you are invested in being the subject who's going to be objective about everything now? How are you going to do that? Read about it somewhere? I have a friend, I bike with him from time to time. He gets injured, and it's a bad injury to the ligament in the outer part of the leg. The one that runs down the outside, and those of you who know anatomy, it's the ITT band. Down the outside, it's a difficult area to stretch, it's a difficult area to heal. He's a serious competitive bicyclist, and so this is something that's very disturbing. He can't ride. If he rides, it inflames, he gets irritated, so he goes through different kinds of rehab. Now he's a, what you could say in the religious sense, a born-again Christian, a certain kind of Christian that's born again, has a particular kind of experience. Jesus comes alive inside of some sort. So the latest email from the dear friend is that the other day Jesus healed his ITT band. He was sitting in prayer group, and a tingle went down the outside of his leg. And God spoke to him, these are the words, God spoke to him and told him to get out there and ride. And he did, last night, he was there with the rest of us. And I said, something happened. And he said, I'm sending out a group email. Because he didn't want to tell the story over and over to people. I'm sending out a group email. And at the end of the email it said, because he sent it out today, so it came out tonight, I saw it. You might think I'm weird, he says. But having a personal relationship with Jesus is far out. No, it's not. To me, it's way in. It's not far out. What's the problem? Who could have a problem with having a personal relationship with love? Let's go a little further. A personal relationship with unconditional love. A personal relationship with forgiveness. Because if you go deep enough into unconditional love, deep enough into forgiveness, there is no relationship anymore. You are unconditional love. You are forgiveness. You are the world. The creator of one of the styles of meditation that came in through Tibetan Buddhism called Dzogchen, his name is Longchenpa. Longchenpa has a book. The title of the book is You Are the Eyes of the World. You are, not you will become, not you will later, not you were before and now you've fallen from grace and you might get lucky and be that again, or actually you had your chance, it's over. You are the eyes of the world. Guess what? Everyone, not else, everyone is that. That's what the words I am that I am mean. They didn't cover that in Sunday school, for me at least. And I had plenty of training in Sunday school classes. We've all been trained, we've all been conditioned. Part of the process of actually waking up is you look at that conditioning. Were you conditioned to be egocentric? Were you conditioned to be ethnocentric? Were you conditioned to be world-centric? Were you conditioned to take care of yourself in certain ways, not take care of yourself in other ways? Because when Paul Farmer gets off the helicopter to get back into the action in Haiti, he's wearing a big giant brace on his knee. His leg's not working exactly right, but that's not stopping him. And the world news isn't covering what he's doing. Because he's as much outside the box still as Greg Mortensen was when he went into Afghanistan and started building schools instead of dropping bombs on Afghan villages. And he's inside, he's so far inside, Greg Mortensen is, that the elders respect him. That's not easy. He's developed rapport. He understands and he's bringing forth a powerful message that educating young girls is a way of peace. It's really radical and powerful and compelling. So, let me say just a little more and then I'll pause and see what you got going on. If you hear about the idea that there's no self from Buddhist teachings, and then you try to figure out what that means, you will never figure that out. But you might try. You might be confused by it. You might just say, well, I can appreciate this and this and this about Buddhism, but I don't know about that. We'll just keep that out there. But what you'd be doing is you'd be pushing away the very core and essence of the Buddhist teachings. Because until you realize that you don't actually exist as a separate being, however that realization happens, okay, what you're doing is living in and being conditioned over and over by the apparent, very key word, the apparent subject object dichotomy. And that's the root of your suffering, if and when you're suffering ever. Every other form of suffering emerges from that. That's why the Buddha was so clear about it. But it's at the essence of the teachings. It's in the core, it's in the center. And it's difficult to appreciate something that you can't necessarily understand with your mind. So there's an easier way around it, and it's available all over the world if you look. And it's right in the center of your heart, too. It's called giving without expecting anything in return. It's called selfless service. In the yogas of the East, it was called, and still is called, karma yoga. But we need to know what that actually means. Because I could actually be thinking I'm being selfless and building up a view or perspective that what I'm doing is special. We know what it's like to listen to a person who's speaking free from self-centeredness. There's an immediate fragrance or tone or feeling that emerges, and that feeling registers in us, so to speak, from the same place that it's emerging from who's ever speaking. And that place is called the place of no self. Relatively speaking, when there is no self, then we're not talking about relativity anymore. Because the absolute view, or true right view, is that there never was any self that's separate from other things. That doesn't mean that this body-mind process hasn't appeared here. That doesn't mean that there can't be various forms of investment in, identification with it, attachment to it, fear of loss of it. All of that can exist and does exist in this world. However, when that which I just described is being fixed upon, contracted into, attached to, invested in, held, now I'm in my prison. You might know people, I do, who are in Haiti right now. Right in there, close. They're not watching it on the news. Some of them aren't bothering to let the news people interview them. They don't have time for that. The 60 Minutes reporter gets in close early on and speaks to a woman who is working in the middle of the night with a headlight on her head, because there's no lights. She's got one of those miner's headlights on, right, up here, and she's moving around. And he gets up close to her and he asks her a few questions. And he says, and it was a very odd thing, I think, that he said. He said, "You seem like you're ready to cry or something." It was odd. I mean, he needed a little bit of help with his counseling techniques. But anyway, he goes, "You know, you look like you're a bit ready to cry or something." She just stopped and she looked at him a little bit like, how clueless can you be? She said, "Well, I am about ready to cry, but I can't really afford to do that right now because I need to be helping these people. I'm going to get back to work." A little bit, just a tiny little bit of reaction, just a little bit of reaction, not much. You kind of feel it there. I need to get back to this. I don't have time to keep talking to you. And maybe it was a little bit tinged by, especially if you're going to ask me questions or make statements like that. So you can be really close to something, like really close to what? Yourself. And still be outside, can't you? Still be outside looking in. The message of the teachings throughout time, the message of tragedy throughout time, the message of illness throughout time, the message of death throughout time is wake up inside what's happening
as yourself. Not, I'm over here watching it, I'm witnessing it, I'm observing it, I'm objective. I'm meditating. I'm clear. I'm centered. What I'm talking about is the loss, and I mean loss, of being centered. It's called centerless awareness, because that's what awareness is. It's centerless. It's centerless right now, and it's centerless in any moment that it's actually considered in its true nature. It's centerless. It's the nature of love. Awareness is the expression of love. That's very unromantic in a certain sense, but it's true. So the mind can easily judge. So easily can it. Little judgment, lot of judgment, of oneself, of others, of actions. And if we grab a hold of that and say, now that's not the way to behave, right view can't be about having judgments. Let me not have any. Let me not have any comparison. Let me not have any opinion. That's not the teachings. The teachings are very clear. Anything, everything can and does arise, have you noticed? Including judgments, opinions. The awakening is to see that they don't belong to anyone. They're not possessed, owned, and can't be kept. It's all passing through. That realization frees you, so to speak, to respond finally, fully, at least in moments. Reaction can still happen. Opinion, view, comparison can still happen. But what it feels like to spontaneously respond comes through. And there's the liberated living happening. We all know this. We know what it's like to have full-on response. And that response, I might add, yeah, is caring. It's wisdom and compassion, so close you can't even say they're two. It's one, and it's flowing. And I would suggest to you, close on this, I would suggest to you that it's just as an example, right now, poignant example, that there's a multiplicity of people in Haiti right now who are serving right in their clothes, and they are directly experiencing the liberation of the Buddha. And they're not Buddhists, and they may have never meditated. And I actually feel like I know one. And she's a wild, crazy, neurotic as heck nurse. And she's there now. All kinds of so-called personal problems. But when the opportunity comes, she doesn't miss the awakening. So, sorry, no jokes tonight. What's happening? Responses? Questions? Darryl.
Question, and it probably sounds pretty stupid.
I doubt it.